Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This is truly an epic event that is raising awareness and revealing just how much is happening in the world of embodiment. And this gives me hope about where we're heading as a people. I'm Amara Pagano. I'm the founder of Azul, a conscious movement path of personal transformation. I work with the body and the power of movement to awaken love and consciousness. Embodiment is a key to my work. And the journey of embodying the map of Azul is what facilitates the process of self-realization. I'm excited to sponsor the Dance and Creativity Channel to share my love of movement and to celebrate the power that it has to serve our collective evolution. If you are interested in awakening your deepest potential or curious about the spiritual and healing aspects of embodiment, I encourage you to check out Azul. Everyone is welcome. I work with people who love movement and people who have never moved. Follow the link and you'll find three gifts for you: a 50-minute Azul journey, a special discount on our online embodiment training, and a free month in our upcoming membership program. So come, check out the Path of Azul. I'll be presenting on the main stage here and in the Dance and Creativity Channel, and I hope to see you there. For now, enjoy the richness of the presentation you're about to see.
Thank you. And we will start this session from Rachel Blackman. Rachel, artistic director of a Still Point Theater, actress, body worker. Rachel trained and worked as an actress in Australia before relocating to England, where she is now based. As well as Still Point, Rachel works as a collaborative artist, actor, director and consultant on other projects. And as I know, Rachel also doing some somatic practices. So you're welcome, Rachel, and I'm passing word to you.
Lovely. Welcome, everybody. Nice to see you. Oh, I really enjoyed listening to Amar's voice. It went right into my body. It was a lovely voice to listen to. Good morning, Sunday morning. How's everyone going? Well, it's Sunday morning in the UK. I don't know where the rest of you look like you're in all sorts of time zones. Some of you look like you're in I'm surprised you're awake. So well done. So this question, genies, guides and muses. It was interesting when I came up with the title for this session, I found myself having a conversation with myself about how to frame it in such a way that people didn't think it was going to be woo-woo. And then I went a little bit more deeply into what these words mean for me and why I felt they needed to be kind of reclaimed, if you like, from a somatic perspective. And there's a talk I'm just going to leave in the chat here, a talk, I referenced it in one of the little ads I put for this session, by Elizabeth Gilbert. Some of you might have seen it before. I'm leaving it in the chat here just in case you want to check it out. There we go. And just tag that and put it to watch it for later, and it'll help knit together some of the ideas that this session has kind of emerged from. It's like the extraction material that I'm drawing on. Also, in 12-step programs, in recovery programs, we know that it's really healing for people to hand their will over to a higher power, which doesn't mean all of your sovereignty. It means that little me, my little self, doesn't have all the answers all the time. It means that we're part of a collective experience of consciousness. And we know from polyvagal theory that that healing happens in the relational field, that being all on my own with myself is not enough, that the ventral vagal function happens in the field of relationality. And I've got a hunch that also healing happens, ventral vagal repair happens when we're in connection with big body interconnectedness. So we know this about earthing, right? Lying on the planet, literally lying on the grass, going for a swim. We're understanding now, science understands that that has an impact on things like depression and wellness and so forth, and the sense of well-being. And this session emerges also from the idea that we can resource ourselves by being part of big body community, the biggest sense of community, that being part of the planet and being of the planet is not separate to our species relationality, that species ventral vagal social connection thing. So can I get a little sense just from the people that are in the room with me that I can see if that feels like it's juicy and alive for you? Does that feel like something you'd like to spend some time with? Could you just do something with your hands to let me see? Yes, yes, getting lots of yeses in the chats. Good, good, great. So in traditional religious structures, what we have is godheads that are separate to us, sometimes occupied by the bodies of priests or shaman or medicine people, maybe historically, or a godhead, an interventionalist godhead, maybe there's a god that is the keeper of wisdom that you as a mere little, oh, thanks, great top, thanks. I got it when I was teaching on the embodied facilitators course. I nipped out one day and went to a charity shop. I just lost my track. Sometimes there is a limited capacity for our fragile little bodies and our single point of consciousness to manage the intensity of experience. And Elizabeth Gilbert says in her talk, we're not meant to hold that all by ourselves. We're not meant to hold it all by ourselves. We're not designed for it. Biologically, we're not designed for it. We need each other. But biologically, we're not designed for it because we need the planet. That's why when I watched this documentary about going to Mars the other day, and I wept at the end because I thought, oh, for fuck's sake, that's just part of the same dysfunction, you know, this dysfunctional idea that we can be in charge of nature, that we can dominate and dictate and colonize and be in charge of. And I felt so defeated by this that we can't, for some reason our species can't seem to see that that's just part of the same quest but in a different form that has defeated us already with our existing home planet. So I've got a feeling that artists have a really important role to play in helping us understand and rehome these principles of genies, guides and muses. I'm not going to go into Q&As just yet. I'm just going to do a little bit of talking. But if you'd like to, just pop a question into the Q&A and there'll be a time for that in a little bit. So I'm going to track backwards through the title of the session. So I've called the session Genies, Guides and Muses, Working with Big Body Intelligence to something, get out of the way of ourselves or something like that, and access flow states. So let's start with this idea of muses. So maybe throw down into the chat what your initial idea of what a muse is. What do you think of in relationship to the word muse? What are your associations? Inspiration. Yeah, great. Lover. It's often associated with sort of sexual fascination, flow. Lovely. This idea that something invisible, deep connection, lovely. So something is outside of us that we fancy or are in love with or desire. Usually there's this word limerence that I'd love to plant here. And if you don't know what that is, go and look it up. It's such a juicy word. It's about the godlike qualities we attribute to someone we're in love with, where even their ugliness shines with light and glory. Like it's like the teenage crush feeling, limerence. So a muse is connected to this idea of limerence. It's where we see, it's what we see shining out in another person, usually a lover, but it could also be a child or a niece or I've definitely got limerence with my nephew and niece. And I cannot get enough of seeing videos of them doing anything, like anything. And I know that it bores everybody else stupid, but for me, it shines. And that's because it's reflecting something of me back to me about my love. So there's something very powerful about this. It touches on Jung's golden shadow. And I believe that if we can find a way to anchor these, notice these places where we're offering our limerence, notice them, then they can become a creative tool. So where is your limerence going at the moment in your life? Where are you casting your limerence? Where do you notice it? My soul. Lovely. Dogs. So yeah, so dogs and soul, but we'll get to those later. Soul is huge. We'll get to that later. That's in the genies category that I'm kind of rough hewing today. Dogs I'm going to put in the second category. Nature. Yeah, lovely. So let's stick with people for a moment. Where are you casting your limerence? You might not want to disclose it because we're live on Facebook. That's okay too. So your who is glowing with, it might be a golden shadow thing. It might be like a movie star, or it might be Emma, or it might be the Dalai Lama, or he's a big one for me. Who else? I've got a thing about Laurie Anderson, the artist, and I've got this whole fantasy about how I think she is. And through her, I can find ways into making my work because she inspires me. So it's someone who inspires you, really, or someone who you'd like to be like. Liz Gilbert, yeah. Mom, children, lover, yeah. Yeah. Watching myself on video, that's interesting. I really don't have that experience when I watch myself on video. Great. Musicians and singers, yeah. Yeah, so keep an eye out for these people that shine with light for you, that feel like they create a sense of, oh, I want to marry them or I want to be like them in you, a golden shadow sense. There's a little sense of stickiness in you about them. And the clue in that relationship is it's a creative opportunity. So wherever you feel that charge, wherever I feel that somatic, that sort of rising up, I know that there's a creative opportunity in there. It's like life is showing me, it's pointing in me in the direction of the thing, and it's saying, this is coming alive. Creativity is here. Life is here. Love is here, right? Do you know what I mean? Yeah? Yeah. So what used to happen for me when I've encountered a muse was I would shut down and retreat and freak out and not be able to connect and not be able to be in flow. And I would feel extremely shy. And so there's a story. A lot of people have heard this story before, but I'll share it again because it's apposite. So this guy, Jason Harvey, who was just like the guy that I wanted to notice me at school when I was 12. And one day he noticed me and he asked me if I wanted to, I don't know, go out on a date with him or something. And I had a full on freeze response and I couldn't look at him. I couldn't speak. I thought I was going to burst into tears. And the only thing I could do was hit him as hard as I could in the shins with my suitcase and run away. And I did. I never looked back. And it was like devastating. And I feel like I never recovered from it in a way. And shadows of that dynamic happened whenever I encountered someone who was a potential muse, who I could learn to work with as a creative resource, right? Like an creative invitation. Another example, I think I wrote about this as well, so forgive me if you've heard this anecdote before, but I mentioned Laurie Anderson before. So I was doing a show at the Brighton Festival and so was Laurie Anderson. And I had this tiny little, like, oh, don't worry about me show, and Laurie Anderson was this big headline act. And I'd admired her work since I was 18, and most of my limerence turns up around people I really admire their creative practice, or their somatic legends. Like I had one with Emily Conrad. I just watched all her videos and everything. And at the moment, this Australian Indigenous actor, David Gulpilil, I just watch everything. Can't get enough of. So there's something in me that's trying to come awake by I recognize something in me in them. but I can't work out how to step into it in myself. So I'm in a lift with Laurie Anderson, and we're both going up to be interviewed by the same radio station for our shows. And it's just me and Laurie Anderson in lift. And I have this freeze response again, and I cannot look at her. And I'm feeling the freeze response. And I'm thinking to myself, just act normal, Rach. Just say, hi, Laurie, I really like your work. Or something like that. Ah! And I couldn't do anything. And the moment's passing and the moment's passing. And then the doors open and Laurie walks out, and I miss my moment, man. I don't talk to her. I can't humanize her because she's like a god for me. You know, there's something, it's some sort of, how do I be worthy enough to even say hello to you, you limerent human. Mm. And I never did get to tell Laurie that I liked her work. But I did send her an email in person, but I did send her an email saying, and she wrote back and said, oh, thanks. Oh, you should have said hi. Yeah. So, yeah, notice when this charge happens in you, and an invitation to, can I see it as an opportunity? And an invitation to write some of these down for yourself. You don't have to share them in the chat, but write a few of these places where you feel that limerent charge, that sense of libido rising in you, this sense of oh my god, I don't know how to hold this. And is there a way that you can sit with, like, be a vessel that can hold that creative invitation? And it might not mean you need to start stalking Brad Pitt, you know. It might not mean you need to make direct contact. It might not even be facing the direction of the person. In a lot of cases, it's facing this way. It's slightly, you know, slightly to the left or right. It's or in or separate. It's a sort of a different stream. So finding a place to put your creative attention that's inspired by this thing. A friend of mine made a film. She had a lifelong fantasy about Keanu Reeves, and she made a song about it called King Anu. and she didn't need to tell him about it, even though she's a singer-songwriter, and she could really have said, hey, look at this song I made about you, and completely froze when I met Johnny Depp. Brilliant. I'm so pleased it's not just me. Well, the thing is, I know it's not just me, it's everyone, right? It's just the human condition when we and everyone's manifest in a different way. Some people might not get shy, they might get dominating and penetrating and try to colonize the situation. I have a much more yin response. Oh, bless you all. Okay, so that's the muse invitation, the invitation of the muse. So notice next time you feel that somatic imprint, you might be able to recognize it, recognize the invitation of it a little, and be a little less dysfunctional like I have been in the past. Okay, and I don't really have that type of response. Yeah, so that's my response. And each of you will have a different response depending on your muse. But also it might be, you might, if you look at your sympathetic nervous system pattern around fight, flight, freeze, collapse, the friend function, there might be, I go freeze, collapse, and yours might be fight, flight. I need to find that person and fuck them or whatever, which is, and it might be that it ends up being a sexual relationship, but often it feels, what I notice in the map of it is that it feels like a sexual thing, or it feels libidinous. It has a libidinous quality, a rising up, juicy, sort of sappy quality, and that it doesn't always need to, because creativity, look at nature, like creativity can become so many things. I start to cry, lovely. So a surrendering as well, that could happen, surrendering. Yeah, so notice it next time it happens, and notice what your impulse is connected to that. Okay, so guides, the next one I want to talk about is guides. So as a child, our primary guides are often our parents, and our imaginative universe. I really love to open out the possibility that guides also encompass the mysterious world of all creatures and all ancestors that feel relevant to you, not all ancestors, ancestors that are relevant for you. And they're not, they don't need to be your literal ancestors. They might be ancestors of a lineage that's not your blood lineage. Like I have ancestors that I work with who are people who have handed down a training to me, for example, that I work with. Ancestors might also be teachers that I have never met. They might be strangers who I don't really understand why they are turning up, but there's something in them, in their presence. And when I say turning up, I work with journeying, shamanic journeying. That's a way that I work with this realm. And it's very much an embodied practice, journeying. Five rhythms could be an aspect, a kind of journeying. Any kind of trance work, psychedelic work could be journeying. Journeying, a lot of you know journeying, I'm sure. So it doesn't have to be this world of the limbic, the sort of what's the world, the word, the place between worlds. It doesn't have to be that limbic world. It doesn't have to be that place that is a place you can source ancestors if you're curious to find who your guides are. Guides can also turn up in the form of a pet, some kind of animal you feel a really strong connection to, a plant. I had a thing where I woke up dreaming about cucumbers and felt like I was in cucumber. I knew something about cucumber consciousness. Cucumbers don't look the same to me anymore. Liminal, thank you. Yes, liminal, that's what I meant. Liminal, the between worlds, between waking and sleeping. And also, for me, it's anything in the natural world. So it can be a place. It can be a place of land. It can be a rock. It can be a stone. Turquoise is shining at the moment to me. It's like it, and its principle, its qualities feel resonant. But even if you don't have to look up a book and find out what turquoise means, the color might be just what you need at the moment, or want, or have to have near you, or really want to have near you, or whatever. And I'd really recommend being playful and curious with this idea of what a guide might be. A guide might be anything in the natural world, or the world of memory and imagination that really comes in as a with information for you, with tools. I've been doing a lot of past life work recently, and there's lots of tools that come into me from that work. And whether or not for you that's a metaphor, or whether that is a sense of something parallel to your life, or whether that's literally a past life, it doesn't really matter, right? Like, what matters is, what can I harvest from this thing and apply to my now? What can I harvest from this thing and apply to my now? So that's guides. I've got this guy who turns up, who's a Japanese samurai warrior, and maybe he's real, maybe he's imagined. And do you know what? It doesn't matter, because what he provides me with is this feeling inside my body of this kind of sub-bass frequency, like a feeling of being earthed. And I'm someone who's very excitable and very emotional and very, very sucked into other people's dynamics. And what that principle does, what his principle does, is bring me down to earth. So I can kind of call in that principle, and it helps me to have this feeling of something that's bigger than me, that's kind of got my back, and it's holding something for me. And it lends me a somatic quality in the real world, in the physical world. Yeah, past relatives can be guides. Wendy Palmer does a lovely thing called a posse, which is, and I work with posses in my mentoring scheme that's kind of like what Wendy does, but also with these maybe ancestral, maybe animals, maybe plants, maybe rocks, maybe gods like Green Tara or whatever, or tarot, you know. Tarot icons can be really useful guides as well. Little ways of framing our conscious attention. So another thing about guides that I find really useful, whilst I'm talking, you might find that there's stuff you want to write down that occurs to you that are your wind. Lovely. Yeah. That are ways that you can kind of hone and focus your conscious attention. So if you say to any person, okay, you can make anything up about anything you like, go. You can make anything up about anything you like, go, start now. Now, why aren't you starting? And that's because to be in that infinite possibility stops us. We can't start. We don't have a specificity. We need a specificity to begin. And what guides give us is a specificity and a kind of container to help us focus our creative attention and make it more potent. Has anyone got any questions about, yeah, Kate Blanchett? Yeah, she's one of mine as well. Anyone got any questions about that? I feel like I've been a little bit more esoteric with the guide thing than I have the muse thing. Anyone got any questions about that? Is it landing for people? You're getting a sense of it? Yeah, great. I really recommend if you're working in the realm of spiritual practice, healing, creativity, any work that you're doing that is other trance work, teaching ecstatic dance. Yeah, Antonia.
Yeah, we have a couple of questions here. Is how do you access guides?
Ah, great question. So
guide is like a door to creativity?
I think a guide is like either a guide can either be a guardian, like a protector or someone like a principal that has your back, or a way of channeling and focusing and kind of gathering attention so that it's not just here, it's focused. So I might choose like a specific guide I might kind of invite in. A specific quality I might invite in if there's a certain thing I want to access in myself, a certain quality. Like the quality that I was inviting in myself in the panel discussion last night was a very different quality, much more yin, receptive, much more listening, much more soft. And today I have to be more focused in my kind of clear, focused attention. So how we access these guides, that's a great question. So putting a question into your meditation can be a way to do it. If you have a meditation practice, just say, I'm interested to see if there's any beings that want to turn up to support me in this meditation today. And you might find that it turns up as a kind of sense or a vision or an embodied sense. Any meditative process, any altered state work process, you could put the question, are there any guides that might turn up for me today, into a five rhythms class, into a shaking meditation. Yeah. Anywhere where you're tipping yourself out of regular. Also, when you put yourself to sleep, you can say, I'm curious to see if anything might turn up tonight that has my back. And you can also just become a little bit curious as you're walking around and notice what jumps out. Like, what plant being wants to have a chat with you today? What? And it might just be, oh, my God, that flower is so beautiful. Or it might be, fuck me, I really want to go and be near that tree or whatever. You know, like notice the pull in you. And rather than the libidinous charge of the muse, the guide feels like it anchors and consolidates and clarifies and supports you. We can do a little exploration now if you like. What can be a specificity? That's a great question. A specificity might be, I've just got the tarot cards here because I thought they might be useful, and lo and behold, they are. So this is from the Thoth pack. This is Aleister Crowley's pack. And this is the Three of Cups. It's a love. It's the card of love. And what the reason Jung thought that these were useful, tarots were useful, was it gives us a place to gather our conscious attention. So whereas before, my question might have been, show me what today's all about, and I pick that card, then it focuses my conscious attention on love and my creative attention on love, right? So I have that place inside me that's alive because of this specificity. Does that make sense? It's not telling me that my day has to be about love. It's waking up this pathway in me so that I can reflect. That's the way I like to think of tarot anyway. I like to be sovereign and empowered with my tarot. What are my rituals? I like to honor the rituals of the planet. I always do a little thing either for myself or in public where there is like an equinox or a solstice. I usually try and honor those. I'm not so hot with the moon cycles, but they're powerful as well. And there's something about how the natural cycles of the planet put us into, if I used to get terrible SAD living in England during winter. And now since I've been practicing ritual, and it could just be as simple as lighting a candle with intention on the solstice. And all that does is focus my creative attention on this moment. That's what rituals do for us, right? They focus our creative attention on this moment now and the nature of this moment. They allow us to be with the nature of the moment in a way that draws our attention to a specificity. So I'm lighting this candle. In lighting this candle, I'm honoring the balance between all things, maybe if it's an equinox, or, and it changes the lens through which I'm viewing the whole world and my relationships and myself and all my work. And a ritual might be as small as deciding to go for a walk in the morning before I start my day, because it helps mark a point in time. It helps me enter something afterwards a little bit more cleanly with a little bit less baggage. Yeah. Just taking a look at the chat. Planet cycles. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, great. And it's really interesting the shift we're going through now with the ecology movement, the deep ecology movement, because I think there's a re-embracing of this, of the opportunity in honoring the embodied truth of the seasons, that the way that we could, the opportunity to rewild ourselves through these anchor points, honoring what the nature of the time is, finding the nature of the time in our work. Rain is my best friend. Yeah, lovely. I like rain if it's warm, if we're in Australia. Not so much in England. Do you want to do a little exploration on guides now? Should we do a little exploration? Yay. Okay. So take a moment to feel where your bum is connecting with the seat. Take a moment to notice where your feet are connecting with the floor. Softening the tongue in the back of the mouth. And please take your eyes off the screen. The invitation is to either let your eyes come downward and half close them. If you feel okay, you're welcome to close your eyes. Or if you prefer, you can let your eyes dance around the room you're in. And if you're choosing that option, keep your peripheral vision open so that the gaze is soft. For many of you, if you've been on the computer a lot, it might be easier to take your gaze down and inward, half close your eyes or close them, simply because when we're working with the screen, we've got a really direct attention focused sympathetic nervous system activated point of attention with our eyes, and it's a tough thing to not be distracted by it if you've got your eyes wide open. And now inviting in the place of attention behind your back, see if you can get a sense of there being eyes behind you. So waking up the eyes in the back of the body, back of the head, back of the shoulders, the spine, your bum. Getting a sense of that part of you waking up. And now simply asking yourself, is there anything that wants to come in support of me today? Is there anything that wants to come in support of me today? What is there that has my back today? What is there that has my back today? And you might find that the image of something turns up. It might not be something you understand, and that's absolutely fine. It might be an animal or a pet or someone you love. It might be a teacher. It might be something more kind of entity-like, like a archetype or a Marvel comic character. It doesn't have to be human. And notice what turns up, and it might not immediately turn up, and that's okay. If you find yourself drifting up into your head, come back to this sense of where you're meeting the ground. It's okay. Just be patient. It's totally fine if nothing turns up. Soften the belly. And opening the sense of eyes in the back of the body. And for me, I often get this sense of something turning up over my left shoulder. I don't know why. But that is a place where it feels things come in or people turn up. And stay with it. You find yourself dissociating or feeling ungrounded, come back to the place where you meet the ground. And what or who has got your back today? And welcoming only beings that have your back. Only beings that have your back and have your best interests and really want well for you. There's a beautiful Italian phrase, ti voglio bene. It means I want well for you, and it's very intimate. It's a beautiful phrase. So beings that want well for you. So just then I had a really strong sense of a big shaggy dog turning up. I've got a little fluffy dog some of the time, but I don't have a big dog, but a great big woolly, shaggy, crazy, but gentle dog just turned up. And so I pay attention to him, right? I might, just to come out of it again, because we have a limited time, I'd love you to throw down in the chat anything that came up during the meditation that feels like it might have something for you, or it's like you kind of harvested something, whether that's a leaf. Lovely. That's I've got Eve's dog. Nice. The sea, the ocean. Lovely. Man, a tiger. Beautiful. Breath. Yes. Lovely. Lovely. Nice. A big brown bear hugging me. Nice. Lovely. Yes, beautiful. So ways into that, to deepen that, might be to go back into that exploration. And it's really simple, and you can do that wherever you like. Go back into that invitation. Start always with where you're connecting with the ground, and always come back to where you're connecting with the ground if you feel yourself floating off. And remember that you are the keeper of the realm, and that's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to be the keeper of the realm. No one else's, it's yours. So anything you bring in, you are bringing in. And anything you don't want, tell it to fuck off. It's your guide. It's your posse. Yeah? And to extend that exercise in that exploration, if you'd like to, what you could do is ask it what it has to tell you, if it's got anything to say. And sometimes, like, my dog just went, no, I'm just a dog. Why? I'm just enjoying being here. Which is interesting, because it's kind of how I'm feeling being with you today. So maybe that's what that's about. These days, I'm not trying to get too attached to meaning or story. I'm just curious to stay in the mystery. Captain Jack Sparrow. Someone got Captain Jack Sparrow turning up. That's brilliant. My partner has a fixation on Jimi Hendrix. This is a bit of limerence with Jimi Hendrix. But we both got coronavirus quite early on in the pandemic before we were testing in the UK. And he got quite ill with it. And one night I was worried he would just stop breathing, and it was quite frightening. And I said to him in the morning, like, what was going on? You were so... I felt like you were nearly dying, but you looked really peaceful. And he said, yeah, I just thought, yeah, if I'm going to die, then that's okay. And I said, but what was it like for you on the inside? And he said, well, I had this dream, and I was in a room with no walls and no windows, and I couldn't get out. And something said to me, like whoever it was, said, you need to cut out a shape in the wall. And if you choose the right shape, you'll be able to escape. But if you choose the wrong shape, you'll be trapped in this room with no walls and windows forever. And of course, he was quite nervous about that. And then on a hunch, he cut out a shape in the shape of Jimi Hendrix. And he was allowed out of the box. So, yeah, that's kind of using a muse as your guide, right? That's excellent unconscious work on his part. And he started to get a little better after that. Meanwhile, I'm on the outside going, breathe, motherfucker, you know, like, just breathe. Anyway, yeah, lovely. Okay, so that's guides. Useful? Interesting? Yeah, great. Could you give me an example of what could be different in the body when they arrive, somatic markers, if any? Ah, that's a nice question. Well, I have learnt to recognise that sense of, oh, yeah, like I'm supported, a feeling of being supported. That's when you know that something good's come in. And if something comes in that just doesn't feel good, tell it to fuck off, because you're in charge. Yeah. Yes, please take care with the Alistair. Yes. So Aleister Crowley's energy is very dark. Yes. But the woman who made the artwork, I think this is the only good, the best thing Aleister Crowley did with his life is this card deck. And the best thing he did with his life was hire this amazing woman artist who I think is a bit of a witch to paint the deck. And this is the only deck I work with. I think it's very powerful. And similarly, like I just said with guides, you are in charge. You're in charge. You are the keeper of your realm. Yes, Lady Frieda Harris. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, fuck off is great advice. There is a time to say fuck off, for sure. And it's a kind of, what about if it's a kind of spiritual bypassing to not say fuck off when something is impinging on your sovereignty and it's not welcome? Yeah. Bill and Ted Face the Music movie. Oh, I'm going to go and watch that. I've never watched that. Jimmy saved my husband's life. Yeah, I sort of feel like he did. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, so genies. So I've left genies till last because I feel like it's the biggest and the hardest to wrap our heads around in a way. Genies for me is an idea. And I was talking to Brooke McNamara about this the other day, that that an idea, what if an idea is an intelligent entity? What if a creative idea is alive? And all I need to do is feed it with the right nutrients, give it the right support, put it in the right conditions, and it has a life of its own. I certainly feel like that when I'm making my theatre work. I feel like something's teasing me here. Something's pulling my attention just out of the corner of my vision, like here. And if I look at it directly, it goes away. But if I stay here and stay in a flirtatious relationship with it, then I and give it the right support and conditions, like a rehearsal for me, that's a rehearsal room, some collaborators, a piece of paper and a pen. If I give it the right conditions, then it might start to catch fire and have life. And then it's about how I play with it and in it, and how I continue to track it. Even if your idea is a business idea, an idea for a project, even if it's an idea for a collaboration, what if the idea itself is an intelligent entity? What if you give it that respect and that kind of awe? What if it has its own conscious intelligence? And so you're letting the idea guide you, not the result. You're tracking the idea, not the destination. Yeah. So Damien Hirst, who's a British artist, said, track the idea, not the money. And I think it's so like crazy coming from him, right? I don't know if you know his work, but he's like, he seems to me to be so mercenary in the way he makes art. It seems so cynical to me. And Grayson Perry, another amazing British artist who you should go and check out, said, the most interesting thing about Damien Hirst is his accounts. And yet, Damien Hirst said, track the idea, not the money. And I found that to be so powerful. I think the idea is the genie, the genius. It's not me, it's the idea. And Elizabeth Gilbert has another idea and a sort of slightly different take on that in her TED talk, but watch it. It'll give you a nice little compliment to these ideas I'm sharing. Yeah, give it space to percolate, get out of the way and it's ready to emerge. That's true. And to come back to Cate Blanchett, she's a good example of it, actually. She, I find in the acting world, in the world of acting, which I've left now, I'm not a commercial actress anymore. I'm not an actor for hire. I just make theatre and train people to be in the body, teach people about being in the body. But when I was an actor, and I still really admire Cate Blanchett, and she says, I need to have a flirtatious relationship with my practice. I'm only interested, being an actor is a bit silly, and I'm only interested in being in a flirtatious relationship with it. And that really went in for me, because when I was an actor, it just felt like a war all the time. It mattered so fucking much. It mattered so much. And I was kind of on it and all over it and desperate for it and hating it and desperate for it and hating it. You know, it just had me in its grip. I was in its thrall. And I couldn't work out how to access this flirtatious relationship with being an actor. It felt like mattering so much. This feeling of a war and all the drama of a war felt like that was what love was. That was evidence of me, how much I cared, you know? But actually, one kills the things we love if we care so much that it kills us. We kill the thing we love if we care so much that it kills part of us, it doesn't nurture us in some way. I think it's a trap a lot of artists fall into, and a lot of people who become really obsessed with their businesses, with their whatever they're creating. I mean, look at our culture, this kind of myth of continual growth and this reaching quality for resources, this kind of grabbing quality for resources. It kind of comes from this feeling of it being a war. What if it's a conversation? What if it's a playful flirtation? It's so much more juicy. What if it's about having a curiosity? A curiosity and a fascination. Yeah, giving, not taking, but also a bit of take. It's a take, a give and take, right? It's a cycle and it's a feedback loop. And in shamanic culture, we take something from the ground and we put something back. We take something from the earth and we give the earth an offering. And so it is give, and it's take and give. And I think that's the dialogue, that's the conversational nature of reality. And that's the conversational nature of nature herself. So I'm just checking the time. How are we going? 5 minutes left. This huge generative principle that is our creative birthright. I'm just about to start a course on this subject. This generative principle that is everywhere in nature, that is the principle that creates all life and that we are creating and created by and creators of, that it's a co-creation happening in all aspects. This is so big. It's so much bigger than us that we are tiny little specks of sand in the face of it. Tiny, tiny little insignificant, yeah? But to channel that and bring that into useful application in our lives requires some, the clue is that an idea is a clue to that, to how we might pull in some of this vastness into some form of focused applied attention. And that might come in just as a sentence or as a thought or you might meet someone and you might suddenly feel like you've known them forever and like there's suddenly some work that you must do together. You might meet someone and first of all think it's a crush and then it turns into a beautiful collaboration. Or you might find yourself, I don't know, like at the edge of a cliff in your career or at the edge of a cliff we just suddenly got told, like our landlady lost her job to coronavirus, so we're having to move out of this beautiful house. And at first it felt like a tragedy, but if I can kind of sit with the void of it and sit with the sadness of it, then out of it might emerge something new. Like when we cut off a plant and take it right, it feels so awful to cut off a plant. And then life is still happening. Life is still happening. It allows some life to come through. Yeah. And a big part of being able to access this, like the question, how might I know when an idea is presenting itself to me? A big clue for me anyway is being able to sit in that void place, the place of I don't know-ness, the place of undoing, the place of, yeah, I don't have a fucking clue. And if I can tolerate being there, then something I cannot expect can come in. If I'm still in my focused conscious attention, then I'm just going to keep getting what I've got. The dirt between the roots. Beautiful. Yeah, lovely. Gosh. Okay. And one more thing I want to say about Jeannie. So it's useful to have a place to anchor, to contain your Jeannie, your idea. And that's part of putting what you need around you to nurture the idea. So also the genius isn't you, it's just coming through you. The idea is just coming through. You are a hollow reed for it. You are simply in service to your genie. It is not yours to occupy or think that, get an ego attachment or think that you've done really well, even though we do because we're human. We will always give ourselves little pats on the back or feel devastated. When I took my show to Edinburgh, I didn't look at any of the 4 and 5 star reviews. I only looked at the 1 2-star review. That's where I go. Okay, great. So we've got to wrap the session up now. Think about what might be the way to serve your genie. For me, it's about being in a dark room with no people in it to start with, and then I can bring people in of my choosing later on. It's also going for a walk and leaving my device behind. All of these things. Okay, great. So we've come to the end of the session now. Was that useful? Super, super useful for you, I hope. Yeah? Great. Great. That excellent.
Amazing. Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome, Antonia.
I will re-listen to this session. Like I find your speech very inspiring. And so in our library, there is an opportunity to download this session as an audio file as well. So you can come back to this topic and at the moments when you are feeling lack of inspiration or connection to your guides and muses, probably you can listen to it or just rewatch it. And I'm inviting you to continue this conversation with Rachel in our Facebook group. So you can find the discussion under the posts of this live stream. And I think it was really, really juicy and inspiring. And we have a whole day today of another inspiring sessions. So the next one will be at 2 p.m. UK with Heidi Forster, Freak, a movement workshop to discover the freak in you.
It's really lovely. I've done that one before. It's great. I recommend it.
Yeah, so let's continue enjoying that together. And to wrap up this session, I have a question for you, Rachel.
Yeah.
The final thing, we are collecting a book with the quotes from all the speakers of the conference. So what is your top tip on how to be more embodied?
What is this moment that wants to happen now?
Brilliant.
What is this moment that wants to happen now?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a creative invitation. Oh, can I say one more thing? Is that okay?
Yes, we have 3 minutes.
Three minutes, great. I just popped a whole bunch of lists, a list of links in the site, ways to connect with me. There's community pages on Facebook and so forth. Everything is about how we can be in the body a little bit more with a little bit more humility and happiness. there's a workshop that's coming up that I'm teaching with Sarah Ryan that I want to point you towards. Sarah runs Wild Walk Home, and we're running a workshop on reverence that really relates to this work. And I also want to direct your attention. There's a link to Sarah's. If you just put in the contact page reverence if you're interested in that, and put creativity course if you're interested, for me to send you stuff about that. But all the links are in the chat there. So take a look, and you can just say hi to me on Facebook if you like.
Cool. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Rachel, once again. Have a great day, everyone.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for turning up. Thanks, Antonia.